Welcome to the Tiny Morbid Fantasies podcast with your host, Andrea and Sophia.
This is a podcast of short stories based on our everyday tiny morbid thoughts.
Thanks for joining us for a very special episode 5.
If it's your first time, welcome. And if you're a returning listener, welcome back.
Tiny Morbid Fantasies is now available on Spotify, iTunes, Podbean, and everywhere you listen to podcasts.
All right, so today's very special episode, the reason why it's a very special episode, I should say, is because we are going to talk about a true crime. And this is actually something that we mentioned in episode 2, Origin Stories.
This is a little out of place for us. We're not exactly a true crime podcast, but we kind of wanted to bring it back around and finish off what we had mentioned before.
And I'm going to insert the clip from episode 2. Something going across 295. And then there's trees in the middle.
Is it the smelly part?
No.
There's got to be like another
way. I know what you mean. There's a smelly part.
Yeah.
But I think it's after the smelly part. The smelly part's closer to Trenton.
Oh, okay.
Not that it is Trenton, but there's like an island, Duck Island.
Oh, I know. With all the murder seagulls. Island. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Only like 2 people got murdered there, but whatever.
We need to explore that because I didn't know.
Oh, we'll talk about murders on that island in a different podcast.
Okay.
Maybe we'll write Duck Island murders.
Local lore. I like it.
And so that was the clip from our episode 2 that led us to do a little bit more investigation into Murder Island, because there are some facts that I actually didn't know. Mm-hmm. I mentioned that there's only 2 murders, when in fact, there were 6.
Would you say it was a spree?
He's actually listed as a serial killer.
Oh?
I forgot to look up how many killings it takes to be a serial killer, but more than one.
I think
less
it's like,
6.
Isn't a certain amount in a certain amount of time, too?
Well, no, because you can, like, kill one person once a year and be a serial killer.
Okay.
I think it's also the fact that it was all the same motive and the people were in the same place doing pretty much the same thing.
All right. Oh.
Yeah, he had a type. Oh, before we get started.
Yeah, before we get into everything, our positivity today, we have Earl Grey Classic. And you can get that from Love the Cook in Cape May, New Jersey. I'm not really sure. It says from the Cape May Historic Collection featuring Light of Asia, Cape May, New Jersey. I'm not really sure, like, which one is the company that made it, but you get the picture. It's Earl Grey Classic from Cape May.
Also, your last tea was from Cape May.
That is a trend from a very special anniversary weekend.
Oh, okay. That's why.
Yeah. Well, we went.
I thought it was coincidental. Sorry.
No. That was, we had a very fancy, beautiful weekend, and I got re-proposed to.
Aww.
Oh, and.
For our positivity.
Yeah. A tiny morbid fact also, if you will, because it's a fact of our lives. We finally got our little dolls made and finished, and you're going to be seeing them in our Instagram posts going forward. To represent ourselves before we get some artwork done.
Or just take pictures of our faces. Every time I go to take a picture, I'm just like, I didn't really do my hair today. It's all wonky.
Oh, yeah. And our selfies together are just, we end up getting real silly.
We don't even take selfies together, really. And I don't like having my picture taken anyway. I have some cute filtered shots from, like, the Facebook filters we can put up. Me is like a vampire. That type of stuff. All right, so today's episode is going to be about Murder Island, or it's called Duck Island. I call it Murder Island, aptly because of the murders that took place. Are you ready?
Oh, I've been ready.
Okay, so to start, Murder Island, aka Duck Island, it's now a piece of unincorporated land, and it's located off of Route 29 in Hamilton, New Jersey, and technically it's a peninsula, but I didn't want to get into that. Into like all the semantics of it.
I don't know what a peninsula is, but yeah.
A peninsula is technically an island, by the way. I googled it. It's like it's a piece of land that is mostly surrounded by water.
Oh.
Mostly.
Okay.
Not completely. So anyway.
Okay.
Alright, so back in the 1930s, it was a secluded little getaway in comparison to the overpopulated neighborhoods of the time. So people were basically living on top of one another. It was very crowded. Duck Island was a well-known lover's lane. It was a landfill, but there was nothing else really over there but the woods. I know, landfills.
It sounds sexy.
Mm-hmm. real nice. But you get a nice view of the Delaware River. You don't park in the landfill. There was a little parking space off to the side. A couple still went there. It was nice enough to get away. If you lived in an overpopulated area, anything is better.
That's true.
So the couples were known to go there for necking, heavy petting, and sex.
All right, good.
Heavy petting. It sounds very romantic and like something teenagers do, but these were, for the most part, adults. And if you pulled off on the shoulder, there was enough underbrush to conceal whatever you were up to, so you had privacy, which is nice for when you're doing all that heavy petting. And the people who frequented the site had no idea that a local, later referred to as a peeper/pervert, was watching.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just as a little side note, all the murders were committed with the same weapon, a pump-action shotgun, and this is actually the fact that helped tie all the crimes together.
Were there anything left of them after that?
Some, yeah. Most of them.
Okay.
There were bits missing, but we'll get into that.
All right.
So we're going to start with the first set of murders, and the reason why the numbers jumped up so quickly was because he was murdering couples coming to the island, so he was murdering in twos. I hate that I said that, but he was.
No, that's what he was doing.
Murder in twos. So the story starts in November 8th of 1938 with Vincenzo Tonzello.
No.
Sorry in advance if I
ruin names. Vincenzo.
Vincenzo. See? Starts with Vincenzo Tonzello, 20, who was married, and his girlfriend Mary Majatovich, who was 15 or 16 at the time.
First of all.
Ick. When I first found it, I was just like, ugh, that's why you were murdered. But, I mean, that's not why, but not to judge. It's still gross even in the 1930s. So they went to their usual spot, and the gunman pulled open the back door and surprised the couple. Tonzello, I'm going to go by their last names because it's easier to say, Tonzello refused to give over any money. So at that point, he was shot at point-blank range, and Mary, of course, panicked, and she ran out the other door.
Okay.
Then she was shot in the back, raped, and left for dead.
Oh, poor girl.
About an hour later, another car pulled in, because, like I said, this was a frequented spot, and they actually found Mary on the ground, and she was still alive. They got her to the hospital, police were called, and from her hospital bed, she actually gave it's vague, because it was dark, but she gave a description of the attacker. And he was average height, kind of stocky, black. That's all you can make out in the dark, so that's what she gave him. After that, the police rounded up just several homeless men who lived in shanties around that part of the island.
Mm.
And they actually brought one in front of her, and she just said, no, he's too big. So he wasn't the killer. I guess he was, either too tall, too fat. Don't know. There's not a lot of information because it happened so long ago that it's hard to find viable information. But 36 hours after the attack, she actually passed away from her injuries.
Mm.
So unfortunately, she became victim number two. Her much older married boyfriend was victim number one.
How do you explain that to your wife? You wouldn't, but...
Yeah, you're dead, you don't. And I don't mean to sound like I'm making fun of the dead, but if you're over a certain age and you're dating a teenage girl, that's gross.
Well, yeah.
Don't and he's care married. What year this happened. And yes, if you're married.
Ugh, with his teenage mistress.
Basically. And at first, the authorities actually did not believe her when she gave the description because her father had found out about her older boyfriend, so they thought maybe the father or one of his friends or he got someone to attack them.
Mm-hmm.
Or, go after the boyfriend, but I guess
she
was there. Or his wife, who may have known one of her family members, or she got someone to attack them, so...
That's logical, yeah, I can...
this is the first incident. There was a lot of people who had reason to want to attack this couple.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The wife and the father. At the scene, police found two shotgun shells. So they had some evidence, and they also found a handprint on the door, and it didn't match the victim's. But it also didn't match any of the suspects.
Okay.
So, the wife got off clean, her family members, her father. It didn't match anyone, so they didn't have any suspects after that.
Mm.
They just kind of held on to the evidence, and that's what you do. You don't know that it's going to be a serial killer, so...
They boxed it up.
Hold on to the evidence. Yep. Can I get a little more tea?
Yeah, of course.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Okay, so next... On October 1st, 1939, so this is about a year later, because the first one took place, just to remind you, November 8th of 1938.
Okay.
So now we're in October of 39. A scavenger looking for scrap junk metal out there in the landfill. He does it all the time, so he's used to finding weird stuff. He actually found a prosthetic leg once.
Oh.
And so he's just like, yeah, there's weird stuff in the trash all the time. And on this day, he actually found what he thought was he saw a foot sticking up, and he thought he found another prosthetic leg, but it actually turned out to be the next victim. He tugged on it and realized, like, there was a whole body attached to it, slightly covered in trash. And that's when he realized he needs to call the cops.
Yeah, please do that.
So he did call the cops, and this is actually what took place on September 30th, 1939, the day before.
Oh.
Or evening before.
Okay.
So Frank Casper, 28, and Catherine, or Kitty, Warner, 36, both married to individual people.
Oh, this is a trend.
Yeah. And okay. They were neighbors. They lived about five doors away from one another. And they wanted to kind of go to the island, escape the prying eyes and nosy neighbors. Also because they were cheating on their spouses.
Mm-hmm.
So why not get away? And they lived, it's about 2 to 3 miles from where they lived, Duck Island. So they're all really close.
Oh, they didn't even try to, like, get away, but all right.
It's get away in the sense of, you're in the middle of nowhere. There's nothing out there, just the woods and the landfill.
You could walk there.
They could practically walk there, yes.
Okay.
Now, the man approached the car. I don't think in this case he even tried to stick them up. He just shot through the glass. So Casper, Frank Casper, was hit in the face and neck, and he was killed instantly. And this is also a trend, but Kitty Warner fled from the vehicle because that's what you would do when
yeah.
a shotgun-toting maniac shoots into your car. So she was actually shot also in the back, but the first shot didn't kill her. It actually tore through part of her right arm, and then she kind of stumbled forward and fell.
Oh.
And I guess she was running into the landfill.
Oh.
And the killer caught up to her and actually crushed her head in with, like, a piece of cement that was nearby.
Baby.
And then he did take her jewelry and some of, like, his watch and fled.
Content alludes to a lot of stuff. This is
and it's different because this is stuff that really happened.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not used to doing true crime.
Sorry. And I listen to a lot of true crime podcasts.
Me too, so. But doing it's a lot different.
I guess, yeah. I'm just like, I found so much evidence and stuff.
Oh.
But yeah, unfortunately this was victims number 3 and 4.
So he's up to 4 victims now.
So at this point, yeah, he's up to 4. The couple in the following case, they were about 3 miles away from Duck Island. Because at this point, he's been in the news.
Okay.
This mystery person has been in the news. People are being attacked on this lover's lane. Mm. But people being people were like, well, we're still going to do this, but we're just going to move somewhere else.
Okay.
They went to, like, this new little spot, not too far away, only 3 miles. That's nothing. And the killer followed.
Of course.
He did take a little bit of a break, because this is now, the next case is November 14th of 1940. So less than a year, but still took some time.
Oh, he just really likes the fall months.
That's what it seems like, yeah.
Okay.
So he kept showing up in the fall.
He's got a fall lust.
I like the way it sounds. Mm. He's got a lust for fall.
I mean, same, but not like that.
So November 14th of 1940.
This name, I can't help you with this.
Ludovicum. Mr. Kovacs, who was 25 and unmarried.
Okay.
And his girlfriend, Carolina Maraconi, 24, who was married to someone else. She had a husband. There wasn't a lot of info on this couple. Both were shot at close range, and Carolina's spouse had an alibi.
Well, that's convenient.
And that's all they had about that couple. Just a tiny little blurb. It's just like, oh, he struck again.
And they
here's two
shot.
People. One of them was married. Husband was innocent.
Interesting infidelity trend, too.
I feel like that was just a coincidence.
Sure.
Because he was just showing up, not knowing these people beforehand.
Okay, and he was that peeper, right?
Like, and maybe,
presumably he was that peeper?
Yeah, and the thing is, you know what? This is, I think Duck Island, or this Lover's Lane, they were calling it, was probably just known for married couples, adulterers.
Okay, yeah.
To just kind of frequent that spot.
Okay, like, your partner's not going to come out here, and if they are, no reason. They will also be cheating.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, all right.
It wasn't written anywhere, but that's that's the only reason why I feel like he kept getting married people.
Yeah.
Now, less than a year later, after the 1940 November incident, on the other side of the Delaware. Now, this is...
The PA side?
The PA side, in Morrisville and in Bristol, PA.
Okay.
Which... It's another state, but it's close.
Yeah. Like,
there's a bridge right there.
You can throw several rocks and be over there.
Or you could take a... Yeah, you can take a boat right over there. Or you can just drive around.
You can ride a bike over a bridge.
Honestly, I don't know what year the bridge was built. I should look that up. But either way, it's not that far away. You could swim over. Okay, anyway. the surviving couples of these attacks, because no one was killed in this... Oh, yeah. Kovacs and Marconi were victims 5 and 6.
So they did die.
So they did die. It was just, that's all they got. Okay. Shot at close range, they died.
Oh. Yeah.
I guess they didn't have an interesting enough backstory. The descriptions given actually matched Mary from the first story, 16-year-old Mary, on her deathbed. After those two attempts, they knew they had... There was a serial killer out there. Mm-hmm. There was someone, he matched the description of what's happening right across the Delaware on Duck Island. They just compiled all the evidence, but they didn't have really a clue to go on.
Mm.
Other than that, all of this evidence matches, but what now?
Yeah.
They were kind of at a loss. And then America went to war with Japan. Pearl Harbor happened. And so the Duck Island murder kind of went on the back burner.
Mm-hmm. Well, naturally, yeah.
Yeah, Pearl Harbor ate up the news for the next few years. Don't know if you heard of it, but it was kind of a big deal.
I think I heard that one, yeah.
Not to joke about Pearl Harbor, but yes, it was a surprise attack on the harbor, and many people lost their lives, and yeah, we went to war.
There's a movie about it.
There are a few movies about it. There's one called Pearl Harbor. so... Oh, and the men who they had as suspects, I don't know how they had them, but they did, they left for the military as well.
Priorities.
So Pearl Harbor took place in 1941.
Okay.
And it kind of went quiet after that, but then in March 7th of 1942, so this is about 3 or 4 months after Pearl Harbor, because I believe that happened in December of 41.
Okay.
A Pennsylvania couple named John Testa, a soldier, and Antoinette Marcantonio, his girlfriend, his real girlfriend.
So they're not cheating?
They're not cheating.
Okay.
They're just getting out of the house.
Sure. Well, I would imagine they're still living with their parents, yeah.
So him and his girlfriend were in Tullytown, PA, and this is, again, just right across the Delaware. The killer approached demanding money. John was shot in the arm. And Antoinette fled, but this time the killer caught up with her and he began to actually beat her with the stock end of the shotgun. He didn't shoot her, though. I'm not sure why. I don't know why it got so brutal, but he just began viciously attacking her. John, who he was injured, but he was not killed, he started the car and actually drove towards them. Mm. And that actually led to the killer to flee. So John rescued his girlfriend. They both survived, by the way. So they get to the hospital, and in this case, there was a ton of evidence left behind because the guy just, like, up and fled. So they were able to get a very detailed description, which was similar to the previous vague descriptions of a shotgun-wielding crazy man. They had fingerprints on the car that matched the ones from the earlier case.
Okay.
That's why you always hold on to your evidence. And a piece of the shotgun stock broke off, and that actually gave them piece of a serial number.
Really?
Yeah, there was a stamp, and that led them to identify that it was a Harrington and Richardson single-barrel shotgun. And this was a major break in the case. The police, they had more information, but they still had to... It took about a year and a half. They went down this long, arduous path of trying to find the owner.
Mm.
And what they actually found was a pawn shop ticket for the presumed owner of the gun. So they found the man.
They're getting close.
Based off of the pawn shop, I guess, where he turned it in.
Okay.
Or purchased it from. They weren't very clear about that part. And the man who had the ticket stated that he gave it to a coworker of his during the Great Depression.
That's a vague amount of time, but yes. Okay.
The Great Depression ended in 1939, so it's like in that time frame.
Yeah.
He didn't say he sold it to him. He just said he gave it to him.
Okay.
And that man was named Clarence Hill. So now they have a name. And the police actually knew the Hill family. It's the 1940s now. It's a smaller world back then. So they knew, they've heard of the family.
Mm.
They actually kind of went through all the attributes and the descriptions given to them. And the descriptions did match Clarence.
Well, I mean, good. Is that our
guy? I mean, it sucks, but completely different world. They didn't have the technology, so they just had to use word of mouth and memory.
But they had the handprint, though.
They did. So Clarence was 33, and he lived 3 miles from the island.
Did he walk?
Didn't state it.
Okay.
He was a family man. He had a wife and a child, and was a Sunday school teacher at his church. And before the killings, he never had any run-ins with the police.
Sure.
So that's pretty much all the backstory for Clarence. There's some other things out there. I don't know how substantiated that information is.
Okay.
So that's all we have for Clarence.
Okay.
And now at this time, once they got his information, Clarence was in the military. And he was away for basic training down south for the last 18 months. Give or take a few months. But they made their way there, put him in a lineup, and they actually had the co-worker go to identify them. So this was a former co-worker, so they just wanted to be sure the guy just wasn't giving the name of a person.
Okay, yeah.
And that he actually knew this person. And when they did the lineup, I'm not sure how they did them back then, but, like, there's no hiding in a room.
Oh,
like,
he could see them.
He could see them, and then Clarence, seeing his old co-worker, and he recognized him, and he, like, waved to him, and, like, he's like, hey, guy.
He's like, why am I here? What's up?
Basically.
Oh.
And then the one article I read, they were like, we don't know if he was just gullible or just overly friendly and not understanding that he was in a police lineup, but he saw his old coworker and just being cordial said hi. So I don't know.
Simpler times.
Yeah. Exactly. Simpler times. So that's all they needed.
Oh.
He was identified.
I don't know why I feel bad for this guy. I hope he's the right guy.
I hope so, too. There's nothing we can do about it at this point, but I hope so, too.
Okay.
So the Army transferred him to Fort Dix, and then Fort Dix turned him into the Hamilton authorities to await trial.
Okay.
So he went in front of the Mercer County grand jury. And after days of interrogation, he confessed to the murders, and I actually have some quotes.
Okay. I'm ready.
You ready? Okay.
I'm ready.
So... these quotes are actually going to be in regards to couple number two, which, just to jog your memory, that was Frank Casper and Kitty Werner.
Okay.
They were the neighbors who lived like 5 doors away from one another.
Oh, yeah.
And they were married to other people. So first quote, I just went there to see if I could see any parked cars there with girls and fellows in them screwing, and to see if I could get a chance to bother around with a girl. Quote number one. Number two, I jerked the door open and they both jumped up and I shot the fellow and the girl ran out the other side screaming. I shot her, I hit her in the arm, and she went down. So after 5 hours of deliberation, the jury found him guilty. Clarence was sentenced to life in prison. He killed 6 people, so you deserve it. He served less than 20 years and then lived a quiet, secluded life, and he passed away from throat cancer on July 9th of 1973.
Oh, that's brutal.
So that is the tale. Oh, and today on that site where all these murders took place, it's a huge power plant.
New Jersey.
Which is part of the smell. To bring it all back around, because you called it, you're like, is that where it's smelly?
It is stinky, yeah.
That's by the power plant. It used to be a landfill. Maybe it still is, but yeah, it smells there.
Yeah.
We should visit.
Sure.
So that is the story of Clarence Hill, and I got a tiny morbid fact for you.
I'm ready for it.
So there's some extra. It has been reported, and some people actually believe that Clarence Hill was forced into a confession.
Okay.
One report said he cried on the stand and stated he was stripped naked and beaten, and then forced to confess.
Mm.
Prosecutors had just vague descriptions by the survivors and Hill's confession to go on. There was no physical evidence directly linking Hill to the murders. And even the pawn shop ticket for the shotgun belonged to another man who said he'd given the gun to a man named Clarence Hill. And race could have been a factor in all of this because he was a black man in the 1940s. And
yeah, it was like everybody else white.
Some were. It didn't go into everyone's races, but
I'm mostly concerned about the pawn shop owner and his coworker, but... I'm assuming the police officers were white just because.
Now, as a model prisoner, he would serve only those 20 years. That's why he didn't actually serve his whole life sentence.
Okay.
So, somehow ACLU attorneys argue that his confession had been coerced and they earned him a pardon. And that's how he got out early.
Aw. I mean, one part of me is like, sure, everything lines up to be Clarence Hill. And the murders did stop, right? Or the guy moved out, you know, westward from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, as far as we know, these are the only ones that took place in that area.
Okay.
And he is the one that they got. And they had some evidence. And the only thing that bothered me is, and this is what led me to want to try to get, I don't know how long or how far back you can get court records, or if you can for murder trials.
Okay.
And I started doing research into it, and it costs money, of course.
Yes, naturally.
But because they said he cried on the stand, I wanted to get the transcripts from that.
Oh yeah.
From that trial, and I want to read those.
That'd be really cool.
Because not that I can solve this already.
No,
quote unquote solved crime. But I'm just curious.
A 2019 perspective on the goings on of that case would be really nice, you know.
Yeah, because these lawyers, the ACLU attorneys, managed to get him pardoned early.
Yeah.
He served a life. He was given a life sentence and served less than 20 years.
So yeah, there's gotta be something in there.
And the fingerprints.
Yeah, they didn't even do anything with the fingerprints, did they?
No.
They had two sets. They had two from two separate crime scenes that they could have matched this person.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not only that, but what happened to the shotgun? Did they, like, he just abandoned the shotgun at some point, and we're just going to assume that it's maybe in the landfill somewhere with that other prosthetic leg?
Maybe. They did mention, yeah, because they did mention it was broken, so where's the gun?
Yeah.
Not that you need it, but just where is it?
But where is it?
I didn't think about the gun because the fingerprints are the thing that got me.
Yeah.
So there was no physical evidence, but they had physical evidence. Like, I would consider fingerprints physical evidence.
Yeah. And not for nothing, but, like, a gun back then probably cost a pretty penny. And I would imagine, so the stamped part for the serial numbers on a metal part, and a metal broke off when this person brutally attacked the woman. So I have questions. But this is all, like, based on print rather than, like, anything to do with how we can perceive the case. So
that's why I wanted those manuscripts, or whatever they're called.
Yeah, the transcripts from the court proceedings.
Transcripts, that's the word. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. I could still be wrong, but you're welcome. But wow.
So that is the story of Murder Island, or Duck Island, and Clarence, the Duck Island murderer, or Duck Island killer, Hill. That's what they call him online, by the way, because there's another Clarence Hill.
Oh.
Who also murdered someone. Not on that island, but he did.
It's a cursed name.
It is.
What did he actually do it, though? Because I feel like...
Yeah, he did it.
Oh, okay. The other one.
Oh, the other one did it. Yeah, the one from, I think this was like 1970s.
Still in New Jersey or no?
It was New Jersey. Is there a relation? I don't know.
Interesting.
He wasn't a junior, but...
Did he have a cousin? A brother cousin?
A brother cousin with the same name? Okay. I enjoyed looking up information and trying to investigate this murder that took place. And
yeah.
In the future, maybe we can do other crimes in New Jersey.
I have one that, I mean, I guess it's considered a hometown murder. I grew up in Cape May County, New Jersey. Yeah, I guess Cape May is coming up a lot right now. But yeah, there was one that happened blocks away from where I worked back then. So maybe I can, I was obsessed with it. Like, I cut out all the newspaper clippings.
Oh, so it's your turn. Your turn to,
yeah,
to give a murder.
But it's really effed up because the victim, I don't know why I was obsessed with it. Maybe it was because he was cute. Maybe it's because, like, my heart felt really sad that someone would murder somebody so young. But it happened on the pavement blocks away from where I worked.
Oh, wow.
And
that's crazy.
Yeah, and you could still see some of the blood, like, days after. So it kind of, like, shook me up a bit. So maybe I'll go into that one.
Be cool. Every once in a while, we'll take a break from writing horror stories and then just tell the story of a real live horror that took place.
Yeah.
Or murder.
Yeah, we'll interject these every few episodes or whatever works for us, really. Let's not make any promises.
Let us know what you think about this murder case. Do you think he did it? I don't. After all the research I did, I just don't feel like he did it.
It's just not adding up for me, honestly.
They had handprints and they didn't use it.
It was just too convenient. They said yes and went with it. But that's my, you know what? Tell us what you think and why you think it.
Yeah, please let us know what you think, because I would love to hear it.
Yeah.
I want to have someone argue with me that they believe that he did it.
Honestly. Ooh, yeah, if you think he did it, let us know. If you think he didn't do it, let us know.
If you find any information,
let us know.
Yeah.
If you liked this true crime story, please check us out on Twitter at Tiny Morbid or on Instagram and Reddit at Tiny Morbid Fantasies.
And to give us your opinion or to also be featured in any upcoming episodes, you can send your thoughts and stories to tinymorbidfantasies@gmail.com.
And if you have any questions or comments, you can send those too.